Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary
with Jennifer Curtin. Hello, Jennifer. How are you?
Oh, good morning. I'm good.
Interesting week, hasn't it? Been in the political spectrum this week. It's been sort of. It hasn't been completely mind blowing, but there's been a few little ticklers in there.
Yeah, there has been. I think Judith Collins has got dipped her toe in the water around, you know, on social media. You know, I mean, she's pretty big on social media anyway. She's a very good user of it in terms of keeping her profile up. But this week she kind of went overboard with a fake news site and then sought to redeem herself. So, you know, it's an interesting week in terms of just what counts as news and where you should go to get your news. Yeah. And what happens in the free speech arena. So it's kind of carried on from last week, right? You know, and you do have to kind of wonder whether how much of it is motivated by the poor polling of Simon Bridges.
I asked Simon Bridges, the first question I asked him yesterday actually was about Judith Collins tweeting of fake news and, you know, is there some sort of protocol about fact-checking stories before you throw them out on Twitter if you're in the National Party?
Yeah.
and also, will there be some sort of discipline involved?
Yeah. And what did you say?
Firstly, I just love the idea of Simon Bridges trying to discipline Judith Collins for a start, you know?
Yeah.
And then he just sort of said, oh, look, we've had a chat about it. It's all, yeah. So, yeah, she's apologised and she's, it was a rough apology at best. It was, and you know, she's not entirely reliable with facts at best of times. You know,
well,
her reliability has been questioned in the past.
It has. Dirty Politics book sort of insinuated that, I suppose. But I do think it's you know, like, she's really smart politician and she's been around the traps for quite a long time now, and you do have to worry. I think there's this Canadian study that's out that shows 6 out of 10 Canadian adults believe that fake news actually means mainstream news organisations are deliberately fabricating news. So this is like what Trump is doing, you know, like calling everything fake news.
Yeah, yeah.
And if we've got politicians using their platform, which is really big, you know, it's not like the same platform, well, it'd be the same as yours, Mikey, but it wouldn't be the same as mine. And it's like they should be using that responsibly. And if we're kind of going to, if we're going to get big picture on this and say our institutions of democracy are under threat more now than they perhaps ever were, and so shouldn't we be using, you know, news and not be involved in spreading misinformation unnecessarily if we're a politician?
How much responsibility is there just on the person who is reading it, though, as well, to go, oh, that's a load of crap?
Yeah, I mean...
You know, like in the, you know, if you read a story in the 1900s of, wild ape man runs through town in the middle of the night, you know, four people reported it, you'd be, really? Was a wild ape man or a drunk? You know, sort of...
Yeah, you don't really necessarily want to be a person that believes everything that you read on, I don't know, BuzzFeed or something, but by the same token, I mean, I suppose it does depend where the responsibility sits. Like, not everyone has a higher education. Not everyone has time to go, you know, triple-check their news sources. So,
yeah, not everyone's elected by the public to represent them in the parliament.
So the people that are reading it, the voters, you know, are going to trust, well, we'd like to think, they trust their politicians to be, you know, signalling that this is the truth in politics. This is what counts as fact. You know, this is real information, not misinformation. I mean, that, you know, it does give... there's a flip side, perhaps, which is that mainstream media, you know, for those who are sceptical, and they are... the way in which those voters go and change their behaviour is that they go and trust the traditional news sources more rather than social media sources and that sort of thing. So maybe that's a good thing for, you know, for our fourth estate that is struggling under the weight of the pressures of this, these other sort of forum through social media. But really you would have to, you know, hope that your pollies are doing a good job in not spreading fake information?
I guess, you know, by it being so common to sort of just take whatever's fed to you at the moment, news-wise, and there's such a lack of research or in-depth sort of investigation into it that you know, we have to be careful that we don't end up championing something that is... As like you say, is completely wrong. You know, a good example I can think of is the meth testing thing.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
which was wrong the whole time. It's not like something happened at the end there that went wrong. It was wrong right from the start. That the people that were making that were working out the levels were the same people that were doing that were invoicing you for the job. You know, sort of thing. And that just required a little bit of investigation. And everyone would have known that. But if now we've got this massive problem, which could end up costing the country, costing the taxpayer, as people get compensated for the problems that they've been forced to deal with because of it, you know?
Yeah. I do think too, the timing, though, we have to think about this with Bridges being so low in the polls, like he's not quite at Andrew Little and David Cameron's
level. How can he be so low and at the same time Nationals have people be still such strong National supporters? Because there isn't, apart from really Judith Collins, there isn't really there's no pretender to the throne that's sticking out like a sore thumb, is there? Or am I missing something?
No, I mean, I think the National Party conference where they brought John Howard out to have a wee chat to the party faithful really did kind of... ask the party faithful to stick with the conservative style leadership of National. So people that we might think could jump out and, you know, like maybe Amy Adams or Nikki Kaye, they're too small L liberal, I'd say, for the way in which the party's imagining itself right now. They don't look particularly progressive on, you know, I don't know, women's rights issues, even though, like, you know, like going back to the fake news item, last night in Parliament, the third reading, it was the Minors Court Consent to Relationships Bill, which is making sure that 16 and 17-year-olds who want to get married have to apply to the court and how the court... And this is to sort of try and stem...
Arranged marriages or forced arranged
right?
marriages. Yeah,
and that was brought forward by a National MP, Joanne Haynes, and it's getting, you know, cross-party support to pass, which is really great, and it's a really important bill. That's not the kind of stuff we see when we're looking at politics and looking at what's happening inside the National Party and who they want to be leader. I mean, I do think, you know, in a way, Judith Collins, you know, entry into this fake news moment is as much about shining the spotlight on her and showing what a great opposition MP she truly is and why she should be leader.
Yeah, I mean, she's lurking.
Yeah, she is lurking.
She's lurking.
Yeah, but the free speech thing is kind of cool. So, you know, we've seen some of that going on this week as well with Don Brash not going to Massey, but he is coming to the University of Auckland Debating Society gig tonight. So,
give him another go. Just let him have his thing and
I've been on a panel with him, and, you know, like, this is a long time ago before, you know, Hobson's Pledge and stuff, but it was after O'Rear's speech, and when you get him in a room, he's not some kind of fiery, you know, he would have done what he said, which is talk about what he believes in and why, you know, what his time of National Party leader was like, and probably why he gave the O'Rear speech, so he would have still talked about why he's anti what he calls separatist policies. But, you know, it's not the Canadian alt-righters, right? Yeah. It's really not that.
Yeah. My impression of Don Brash is that he's sort of just stumbled into it and he just believes what he believes. And we're allowed to do that. We're allowed to, and we should always be allowed to do that. You know, it's like, and you know, he tries to argue the point sort of unsuccessfully, and that's what it's all about. You know, it was really interesting watching the media deal with the two Canadians over here. We shouldn't say the two Canadians because that sounds quite racist, doesn't it? Lauren Molyneux and Stefan Northern, whatever. I'm not trying not to give them any more oxygen, but at the same time, you know, just watching even what reporters were sent out to deal with them. You know, it's like they really spooked big media a little bit, which I thought was weird. Whereas they just sat there and gone, gosh, shush. You know,
people got you know, and also just the descriptors, like mainstream media, you could see they were really tiptoeing, right? They were really quite nervous about what language to use. And meanwhile, as a result, really, mainstream media were getting trashed on social media because it was like, just call it out for what it is. So, I mean, I think the main thing is that we can have, from my perspective, considered debates about free speech without talking about reverse racism, all these other things that have it's now fed, which are really unhelpful to having
really
a considered
good,
conversation.
Really good clickbait, though.
Oh, yeah, isn't it? Just, it's really sad, actually, but anyway.
Yeah. Hey, let's forget about the fact that we're killing all of our kids, and let's talk about, you know, Canadian Southern Right Act, alt-right activists. Hey, the business confidence there's a really, really great. We're talking to Sam from Simplicity about this yesterday. There's a TV news article talking about business confidence. There's some dude, Kim Campbell, I think was his name.
Oh yeah. Oh,
he looked like everything was on the line. If the New Zealand just didn't wake up to the fact that this government is destroying, this is our, it was like, this is the last chance, this is the last time you'll see me on TV sort of thing. And just, they really did, a whole bunch of people, apparently the top 500 companies in the country or something, sitting in some terrible, look like detention room at a bad secondary school, all just sitting there with the most morbid looks on their faces. And I thought to myself, really, no business conference? Well, it's not going to be with that attitude.
I know that the person, the woman who from ANZ who runs these business surveys is saying, like, you know, people are asking questions about the methodology, but we've talked to, you know, 60% of our survey respondents are small businesses with people, you know, 20 or less employees, and so that's the coal face. And ANZ staff are reporting that businesses are really concerned about minimum wage, but, you know, this is still an opt-in survey, right, that they do for starters, but you'd also have to really wonder if these are the businesses, like business leaders wanted, they, you know, off the ball, it's wanted a Labor government. They needed some of the social issues fixed, and they knew that wasn't going to, and they needed infrastructure issues fixed, and that wasn't going to happen under National. But it was clear that they were trying to message National, and they still expected National to win. And when they didn't, it's like they've got one message, the business leading, you know, leaders, the big ones, and they're just running with it, irrespective of what's happening. And it's, and there are a lot of external risk factors that are going on, so it's not all internal. And they could be messaging differently, but they've clearly made a decision that they're just going to stick with this negative message, you know, come hell or high water. And I think it's, you know, you do have to wonder, they're chopping off their nose despite their face, that they want the economy to tank so that they can say they were right and National should have been in government. I don't know. It's really, because Labor's in a really difficult place when they are, all the election surveys show us.
Whoever came in after a three-term government is going to be in a difficult
place.
But
also, like, Labor has a lot more to prove to an electorate that they're good economic managers, because we know from all the election surveys that voters think that the natural party that's going to be the good economic managers are National, right? So Labor has to prove it, which means
is there ever a chance that would change? That small business would champion the Labor Party? Because that's really, really, really ingrained in people, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it depends, you know, like with the future of work, you know, and the way people are doing business and thinking about business, and perhaps maybe, like, okay, I'm going to put my fantasy hat on, that employers and employees are sort of working in a different way that's more cooperative and, you know, in the best interests of both workers.
Cooperative? Best interests?
Then, yeah, I'm going to get trolled as lefty now, eh? But I mean, it's like if they all work together, then maybe we could assume that both governments would be working in the interests of not just, you know, oh, we need to keep minimum wages at, you know, $14 an hour because otherwise we can't stay in business.
Jennifer, thank you very much for talking to us this morning.
You're welcome.
We'll speak to you in a couple of weeks.
Bye.
Cheers. Thank you.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.